It's so good. I have to introduce our guest. We started early because of our interviews with the cast of Schmigadoon. So Stelly Siteman, one of my favorite theater,
Impresarios
in St. Louis is our guest today. And she's going to talk about the Max and Louie Productions return. So how are you, Stelly?
Lynn, I am so grateful and happy to be returning to the stage once again. We have missed producing desperately, and I couldn't be more thrilled. And the play is perfect. It is for what we've all been dealing with, I think.
Well, Stelly's company, Max and Louie, named after her dogs, right? Max and Louie.
Yes, my two little Bichons.
They started in 2010, and I wasn't aware of them till 2012 when I saw The Lions, and Bobby Miller was supposed to be the lead, and he was ill as he had all those physical issues for a couple of years before he sadly passed away. And you had the Wayne Solomon, who was in the hospital bed, playing the part and having the script nearby. And you were so apologetic. And I was like, well, these are, you know, you had heavy hitters. Judy Mann won our St. Louis Theater Circle Award that year. So you were on my radar then, the first year of the St. Louis Theater Circle. And ever since, Carl Stelly's production company has won multiple theater circle awards. And in fact, the last ones we did in 2020, your production won most outstanding drama with Indecent.
Yes.
Which was fabulous, which was really fabulous. And then her Grey Gardens has it been 5 years? It's been...
No, I think it has, Lynn. I think Grey Gardens was in 2016, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, one of the best productions I've ever seen, and that cast was magical. Debbie Lennon was introduced on our radar, and she has since won multiple theater awards. She played Carl. She played the Florence Foster Jenkins character in the play Souvenir, which they also won for. And so you guys have been on a roll.
Well, that's very sweet of you to say so. And, you know, Debbie's really become a staple. We do really two productions a year because I try to utilize our resources in the best way that I can. We're not one of those companies that does four or five. If I do two, I think in the year we did Grey Gardens, Lynn, actually that was the production that year. Because it was big, it was quite costly. And I believe in why not doing something right as opposed to spreading myself too thin, if that makes sense. Yeah, it's interesting. That's when I met you. You know, this is ironic because the very first play we did at Max and Louie was The Lady with All the Answers, which was, of course, a story about another advice columnist. a syndicated newspaper columnist, and now 10 years later, another century, we're doing another play about an online advice columnist, and again, letter writers seeking advice, and how apt as we're coming back from this pandemic, you know?
Yes, and well, and that was one of the things. Cheryl Strayed's original book, she had issues with. It was all anonymous, but she wanted to publish the book about it. And so she had to go and ask her online followers if they had ever written a letter to her to give her permission to do that.
Right. Yes, I know.
They all said yes, though. The people that follow her really follow her, and she got permission for all of them, or else your play would have never happened.
I mean, isn't that beautiful? I mean, that's the ultimate, right? I mean, this play is about love. It's about forgiveness, and empathy. I mean, and I think that those letter writers in doing that are giving it back, right? Paying it back, as it were. It's interesting that you say that. I'm really glad you brought that up, Carl.
Well, thank you.
Carl is.
I've been a fan. I've been a fan of Cheryl's since the book Wild. And then that movie was fantastic as well. And then Tiny Beautiful Things. That was her third book. So she's done very well for herself after walking across California.
I know. Was that amazing? Lynn, did you read her memoir?
I did not, but my brother read Wild and told me about it. So when the movie came out, I was familiar with it before I saw it. Now, Tiny Beautiful Things is the Max and Louis production that starts July 29th at the Grandel, and it's going to run through August 8th. And you have assembled your dream team of designers and producers again. You have Dunsey Dye, who just does the best sets, and Patrick Huber, who does award-winning lighting, yes, and Eileen Engel's going to do the costumes. But then you have your cast, who is really first rate.
I agree. And this is just a very female empowered team too. And you know, it's interesting because when Carl was talking about Cheryl's work, you know, both Cheryl and Nia Vidarlos, who adapted Cheryl's book so beautifully, you know, have consistently demonstrated, I think, their compassionate commitment, you know, to personal truth, to the healing powers of empathy, and to the necessity of human connection. And they're not, we have incredible female power in this show, Lynn and Carl. The director is Sydney Grossberg-Ranga, who actually started this company with me in 2010. Sydney is directing, and then we've got a female TD. We're very short on that in St. Louis. Joe Novak, who's been instrumental in our production, brilliant, brilliant, teaching at Webster, but not Webster, rather Burroughs, is out of town now on a sabbatical. And we were, oh my God, what are we gonna do? Joe's not here. Well, we found an incredible girl, Isabel from Stevens, a new graduate from Stevens. She's 21, brilliant. Another AT, she's our TD. She's building this set along with the assistant TD, whose name is Patrice. Katie Orr is doing props. So along with the stalwarts, you know, Dunsey, and of course, Patrick Huber, who won for his incredible lighting in Indecent. Am I forgetting anybody else on the male side? I'm not sure. Dunsey, Patrick, oh, Philip Evans, who won for his sound design in Indecent, is on this too. But we've got this female empowered team. Amazing. Did I get off the subject?
No, it's fine. And also,
get off this.
Michelle Hand, who's playing Sugar, the advice columnist, she is one of the top actresses in town, and she is also a Theater Circle Award winner and multi-nominee, and she seems perfect for this part. I think, Carl, you'll agree that she's going to be the embodiment of Sugar. And then supporting Greg Johnston, Wendy Greenwood, and
Abraham Shaw. It's a dream ensemble, Lynn. And I have to tell you something. You know, on the first days of rehearsal, the cast and director gathered together and talked about the current of empathy that's running through this play. Now, here are the challenges with this piece, and they rise to it magnificently. There's an enormous amount of trust that the actors have for one another in this piece. They can't hide from one another. This is a very sit and talk kind of play. So from a directing standpoint, you've got to really work hard to keep this thing active. Are you following me?
Yeah.
For an hour and 20 minutes, because this is based, Carl, as we were talking about, you know, on the epistolary exchanges of these writers. And these are real writers. That's the beauty of it. These are real people that have written these letters. But that is a difficult chore to keep this active. And I have to tell you, Sydney and this cast are breathing life into this piece.
That's beautiful.
Is the style like Love Letters, the play where couples had to read their letters to each other?
Nobody's reading. They are totally off book, as it were. They will refer to devices every once in a while. And when you see the play, and Carl, I hope you'll come and be my guest.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes. But no, they're off book. They're speaking conversationally to Sugar, to one another, and addressing the audience. You'll see, Len. Such a surprise.
I'm excited. I'm coming July 30th, the first Friday, to see it at the Grandel. And yeah. Carl, you might have heard me talk about their play End of the Rainbow, which was the story of Judy Garland. Why I didn't like Renee Zellweger's
right,
because the woman who played Judy Garland in The End of the Rainbow, which Max and Louis produced a couple years ago, was the best. Angela Ingersoll.
I've seen Angela in concert. She's fantastic.
You know what, Len, I told you this, and Carl, if I couldn't get Angela for that show, I wasn't going to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had auditions in St. Louis because we've got, as you know, wonderful, brilliant talent here, but this was very specific. We knew we had to get Angela. It wasn't going to happen. And for me, Lynn too, she was the embodiment of that role, and I couldn't have been more pleased.
Oh, really. It just got, you just nailed it. It just home run. Now, you pick, what I like about you and your producing partner, Dee Kaplan, you all pick works that are not familiar to St. Louisans, but yet once we see it, we are, and we're big fans, because hardly anybody does Great Gardens or Souvenir or this Tiny Beautiful Things. And so you are always picking things for the audience that is going to be bold in a way that Steve Wolf did, I think.
Yeah. I really try to. Tiny Beautiful Things has a wonderful, it's got a life that ever since it premiered at the Public in 2016, SRO, I might say, and also it was extended. It's playing a lot regionally. And I know too, during the pandemic, when I think there were companies that might've been streaming productions of it. You know, when I picked it, I felt that it was the, as I say, you know, the perfect piece. It's interesting because I want to read you something that she said about the pandemic. This is coming from Cheryl Strayed. You know, her radical empathy has really come to the forefront. And she said, now more than ever, hard times come. They will keep coming. They will come again. The unexpected beauty of difficulty is that it gives us very often a deeper perspective on how important it is to honor friendships, honor love, honor connections, honor forgiveness. You have to forgive to move forward. Honor that voice inside that says, what I feel matters. We went through a collective reckoning with the pandemic, and a lot of people turned inward, you know? And I thought this was the perfect piece coming out of the pandemic. So I guess I kind of pick and choose pieces, getting back to that question, that are relating to where we are maybe currently, socially. Because even with Black Lives Matter, you know, there was a lot.
Right. Well, I think people have had a time. We had 16 months to reflect and decide, isolation was different for everybody. And I think that the best thing to take us out of that is being in a theater with other people and sharing a story and connecting with it. So I really look forward to it. And I'm going to be doing an article about Michelle in my coming on my website, poplifestl.com. And so the famous take 10. So we're going to talk to Michelle about that, and that'll be fun. But you also have another play coming up at this year with Debbie Lennon, reprising her role in Songs for Nobody. So tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, that play was very, very successful at the Kreuzberg. And actually, that was just before the pandemic hit. I think it was one of the last plays that was produced in St. Louis.
I think yeah. so, too.
It ended, I think, in February of 2020. Yeah, and it was tremendously successful. A lot of people couldn't get in. We did it at the Kreuzberg.
Yeah, didn't you have like limited seating? It was only like 50 seats, and so people, I think you sold out quite a few shows.
We did. We actually squeezed in 100. Don't tell the fire marshals. is this being aired?
Not till tonight, so okay. You can get your affairs in order.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was so popular that people wanted to do it. Debbie said, why don't you stream it, you know, maybe during the pandemic? And we thought, no, better yet, Pam Hunt, who's an amazing director. Pam's done a lot with Muni and a lot regionally across the country. You know her resume, Lynn. She's amazing. She wanted to come back and do it. We thought, well, let's put this in the Grandel where we can get a bigger audience. And also, you know, we can distance successfully. And if there's any cause for concern with the pandemic, like what we're doing with this show, you know, we have separation of masks and unmasked section and one row between each row. So it makes it easier to take precautions as opposed to putting it in a black box again.
Right. Well, considering how Missouri's numbers are really high, I think that's smart because the Grandel, once they refurbish the Grandel, you've been there, Carl, since they
have.
Many times. And it's very nice. And I like when you all do shows there, Stelly. And I also like when Tennessee Williams' festival does shows there, because I really think that that's a great space. Now, Debbie, for the Songs for Nobodies, she plays like the fly on the wall. Like she has encounters with all these famous singers, Carl, like Edith Piaf and Judy Garland and
Patsy Cline. And don't forget Maria Callas at the end.
Oh, that's right. Brilliant. And so Debbie has to sing like all of these artists, and it's fabulous.
And she does. And you know what's interesting, Carl? She's also the five nobodies who come in contact with these icons, and their lives are changed immeasurably from meeting the icons. So Debbie is literally playing 10 roles, right, Lynn?
Wow. Yes.
And it's a tour de force, and she's, in my opinion, brilliant. She nails yes. it.
So
said.
you have to have that on your radar. So if you want tickets to yes. Max and Louis season, go to maxandlouis.com and you'll get all the information. And you use MetroTix, don't you?
We do. And you know, there is a service charge, but it's worth it. If people do not want to pay the service charge, I want to get this in, they're also welcome to come to the box office that day or that evening and just pay the theater restoration charge, which is $1.
Oh.
It used to be that you could go to the Fox box office, but the Fox box office at this time is not open. Correct.
Right.
So that's important to know. If you do not want to pay a service charge, know that you can always do that.
I know it's just everything. I mean, we're not going back to the old ways again. It's the new normal and we just have to adapt. But I'm so happy that you are starting on a high note. And then your background is you were once an actress and also an arts educator. Is that correct?
I was, yes. And you know, when we started this company, as I told you, Sydney Grossberg Wanga, another graduate from Webster University, as am I, 1974. I lost track of what I was going to say. What were we talking about?
About your past career.
Oh, past career. Isn't that funny how you shy away from talking about things like that?
Well, I was going to say your careers come full circle because you once played an advice columnist when you were an actress. You played Ann Landers.
That's exactly right. You know, how did you know that?
I do my research.
You know what? And Sydney directed me in that. And it was wonderful. It was really It was really a workout. It was a one-woman show, Lynn. And I guess we started this company. And you might say maybe it was a vanity project. Is that what they say? When yes. The producer and the actor are the same. And so, yeah. So then after that show, I did another show. And I decided, if I'm going to do this thing, if I'm going to produce this, if I'm going to do this and become a producer person, I can't act anymore. And that's what's happened. And, you know, I've given it over. And I got to say, I am totally happy. I love it. I did a lot of acting prior, you know. And as a graduate of Webster, I did a little stint in New York. I did some off-Broadway stuff. I acted with Nathan Lane. Wait a minute. What about this? In Maine, in an upstate theater called, what the hell was the name of that theater? Oh my, the Hayden, Mac Hayden Theater. Nathan Lane was Mr. Babcock and I was Vera Charles. I was in my 20s. I was what, 20, 22, 23?
I can see Nathan, you playing Vera.
Nathan was, what, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years younger than me. And he wasn't Nathan Lane then, but he was Nathan something else, but he had to change it because of equity. Now he's Nathan Lane. But isn't that, I mean, so I did summer stock. I mean, I was in LA for a bit too, did a lot of voiceovers, did some under fives, you know, television stuff, and came back to St. Louis. And now I'm a producer.
he was Joseph Lane. He was born Joseph Lane.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's
what did you just Google that?
I did.
He is
computers while we're doing this interview.
He's very quick with the internet, Stelly. Well, I have had such many great conversations with you in theater lobbies. And in fact, I recall after Great Gardens, my friend Robert and I talked to you and Dee at least an hour standing up in the parking lot of the Jewish Community Center.
I remember that, Lynn. I remember that so well.
Yeah. And you tell people about the backstory about the difficulties in arranging, you know, producing. People don't really understand what producers do. And no. So she'll give you the whole rundown of the difficulties and trying to get people and just the whole rights. Just the rights are not so easy to get.
Yeah, it's something, you know. It's not, this isn't like New York when there's a million producers above the title and basically, you know, they're getting they're the money people, you know, and that may be where it ends. You know, here you're kind of a one woman band, and Dee Kaplan, who is my partner in life, I'm happy to say, as well as my partner in this theater company, work pretty hard to get it together. You know, you just can't start a production. You got to work months ahead on it.
It's right, work. Then.
Getting the rights, all of it. Hiring the team, you know, getting the funding, writing the grants. You know, it's all that stuff. So, you know, that's why I say I can't act anymore. You know, few of us are Barbara Streisand. I think she does it all.
I also want to thank you and your family for the wonderful philanthropic work that you've done in the area, because you probably don't get enough credit for that.
Well, that's a very sweet thing to say. And I gotta tell you something. I am very proud of my dad, because that's dad, Carl, you know, and he wanted to give back to this community and wants to get rid of the scourge of cancer, and they're making so much progress. And very proud of the Siteman Cancer Center.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, personally, Siteman Cancer Center saved my son's life. He's been in remission since May 23rd, 2013.
Thank God.
I know. And because of those doctors at Siteman and because he had a rare aggressive cancer and they used experimental treatment on him. And because of them, he ran the New York City Marathon for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society 5 years late, you know, so So I have a special place in my heart for those doctors and nurses. The nurses are so fabulous.
Yep.
And then also, because I'm from Belleville, I pay attention to the East Side. I cover the East Side. And there's a new Siteman Center in Shiloh, Illinois.
Wait a minute. I know about that one.
Yeah. So cool. People don't have to come over to St. Louis. They can be treated in the, because O'Fallon now has St. Elizabeth's Hospital. Memorial right. Hospital has one in Shiloh. And so there's a new Siteman Center in Shiloh.
How great. Oh,
I know. So it's just made such a difference in people's lives, especially if you can't get transportation.
Right.
You don't have any, And
well, I know that one of the concepts was trying to make it as easy as possible because families are so stressed with the fact that their loved one is dealing with this. You know, I think there's a hotel now across the street. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do everything, I think, to make it easier.
Yeah.
Easier.
Oh, Well, we're so lucky here to have it right here, but people come from all over the country.
Right.
Yeah, it's world renowned.
Yeah, and so it's really amazing, but no, it's just been great to see how your theater company has blossomed and thrived, and you see what they're doing, and you know that it's worth going to, because you know you're going to be highly entertained, but also you will be thinking at the same time.
Now, so, Steli, we ask all of our guests, what has gotten you through? I know you've been producing a show in the last 15 months, but what has gotten you through, either something you read, something you watched, or something you experienced in the last 15 months that you would recommend to others?
What has gotten me through? Carl, I know it's this book.
It is.
It's Cheryl Strayed's book, because I have to tell you something. When I saw this at Victory Gardens in Chicago, I saw it just before the pandemic. I saw it and I knew I wanted to produce this show, okay? Because for me, it demonstrated clearly the thing that makes theater, theater. Its ability to generate empathy in audiences. And it's just a show that reminds you of the need we all have to connect with one another. When I saw that show, because I didn't know from Cheryl Strayed, I have a sister who has her book by her bedside. You know, she's underlined, she's every sections of the book. I didn't know who she was. And then after I saw this show, I picked up the book.
That book right there.
Beautiful Things, right. Advice on Love and Life from Dear Sugar. And that's what helped get me through the pandemic. It sounds hokey, but it's true.
Now, does it make you want to go back and read Wild?
And my relationship with Dee, I would say.
Well, I hope so.
Haven't you both been together for like 40 years?
We have. You figure out the math. I think it was 1976. Jerry Berger, the gossip columnist, introduced us. One of the nicest things Jerry's ever done.
Some people can't say that Jerry's ever done anything nice for them.
That's right. Because this brought Dee into my life. Personally, and of course now, we have this business together, so.
Well, that's very cool. Jerry,
What got you through the pandemic, Carl?
We still did this every week. And since I'm in the media, I was, I guess, essential. So I still came to the radio station every day.
Amazing. Well,
Steli works for Entercom, which is now Odyssey, right?
Odyssey.
KMOX and KZK.
97.1.
Lynn, what got you through?
I think, besides my work, my family and friends, because I did not see my youngest son, Charlie, who lives in Brooklyn, for a year, 6 months and 11 days till last week. And so without Zoom and FaceTime and my friends and I, we had a weekly Zoom together. And I just think that isolation is just so hard on people. And if you don't have that support system, Carl and I see movies. We're in the St. Louis Film Critics Association. And so we had to, but we were allowed to see streaming films. So, but then Netflix and and all that, but
Disney Plus, HBO Max, all of Apple TV,
yeah,
all of them.
I really missed sitting in a theater though.
Well, I have too. You know what? I haven't been to a movie theater since the pandemic. I have to tell you that. I've been streaming too. I haven't been to a movie theater, but I'm going to do that because I miss it, you know?
What'd you watch? Anything that stuck out to you?
Oh, well, the Kominsky Method I loved. Have you seen it?
Now, are you happy with season 3 without Alan Arkin?
Yeah. I mean, I love Kathleen Turner. I thought season 3 worked, but I miss Alan Arkin desperately. Yeah, but I loved it. I mean, I Mayor of Easttown, I loved. You know, what about you? Those were just two that are popping into my head.
Oh, Mayor of Easttown was so good, and Kate Winslet.
Brilliant.
So good. The Emmy nominations came out this week, and it won a ton.
But The Mandalorian got more than anyone except the Crown, and The Mandalorian got all the.
Oh, The Crown! I forgot about The Crown. Yeah,
yeah. I will say my guilty pleasure was Bridgerton.
That I haven't seen.
Oh my God! You have to. You have to.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
Oh no!
Ixnay on Bridgerton.
It's a lot of
weird turn of the century. 18th century sex.
It is Shonda Rhimes.
Oh.
Reggae Jean Page. Three words. Reggae.
Really?
He was on TV for one season of this and got to host Saturday Night Live, and half the audience didn't know who he was.
But he was fabulous.
He was very good.
What a Shonda. In Yiddish, that's a shame. Ashonda, how could it be?
No,
my grandmother would be very proud.
He is going to be huge. He really is, because he's one of the most magnetic performers I've ever seen. And just because we've all seen him naked, I'm not talking that way.
Shame.
But you don't really like
all of a sudden, I'm getting a little hot.
Yeah, Stelly, since you're a fan of theater, you will like the oldest brother, Jonathan Bailey. He played when the Stephen Sondheim musical Company was redone with a female cast, with the female Bobby.
Right.
He played a new character called Jamie, which was the Amy character on Broadway, who sings I'm Not Getting Married Today.
That's the gay couple, right?
Yes.
The two men, yeah.
Yes. So yeah. Jonathan Bailey won the Olivier Award for Best Supporting Actor in a Musical, and he's the oldest Bridgerton son. He is quite the ladies' man in Bridgerton. So, and next season we'll concentrate on his story.
Well, I just caught up on Breaking Bad, believe it or not.
Do you believe that?
I loved it.
Oh my God. It's like one of the best TV shows ever. And
so
that
now
second...
are you going back and watching Better Call Saul too?
Yes, I know. I was going to say, how is Better Call Saul? I've heard, you know.
Some people like it better than Breaking Bad.
I watched the first two seasons, which I liked. I haven't had time to get into the last couple seasons, but I hear it's very close to, you know, because it is the prequel. Yeah. So there's overlapping.
It's catching up, right.
And Mike is in it. But I do think that Breaking Bad, on the whole, all the seasons, the second to last episode, the Ozymandias. Yeah, that one. One of the all-time top 10 TV shows of all time, episodes of all
time.
Wait
a minute. Refresh my memory on that, guys.
That was the second to last episode of Breaking Bad.
What was that? Well, yeah. That was when
the son, son with cerebral palsy turns on his father, and Walt takes the baby. And then there's the storyline with Jesse and Hank. I don't want to give spoilers away, even though it's been since what?
10 years
now
ago.
Now I remember that.
There's also a
sequel movie to tell you what happens after Breaking Bad with Jesse too. That's on Netflix.
I just love Aaron Paul as Jesse. The whole last couple episodes, I was just like, please, Jesse, don't die. Don't die.
I love Aaron Paul.
The whole time. Yeah.
I have to tell you, I saw Bryan Cranston in Network in New York and on stage. I don't know how many years ago, a couple of years ago, I guess, before the pandemic. Brilliant actor. Oh my God.
Oh, yeah. How when people say to me like, oh, I don't want to watch Breaking Bad because it's about drugs. I say, no, it is about a guy who keeps coming into the moral crossroads of life and he makes decisions and he keeps going down this path and he keeps making other decisions. It's really, you know, it's just so.
Drugs are just a small part of it.
Right. Yeah. Vince Gilligan is so unbelievably talented to come up with this whole thing. And then what's the guy, Giancarlo Esposito as Gus Fringe?
The whole flashback,
Dean Norris as Hank, and oh my God, and then the girls that are the wives, and just Jesse always calling him Mr. White.
Such a great, I just caught up with it. I mean, I one of my favorites, all time favorites.
Well, it's a good thing to binge on if you've never seen it, you know, because sometimes you just get it, you know, you don't see what everybody else is talking about. But at first, when you started watching it, it was like a cult thing. Yeah. It was like, oh, you like it. Because, you know, I don't know if AMC promoted it right, but that was also at the time of Mad Men.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, let's take a quick picture. Everyone, get your.
Oh, God. Wait a minute. Carl, I said to Marla, I said, wait a minute. Is this going to be a total like visual? She said, no, there's screenshot.
One screenshot, and we're going to do it right now.
Take it easy. Take it easy. So
look right at the camera and just smile.
At you?
Yeah. Done. See, that was easy.
Is that okay?
That was natural. Do you have any parting words about Steve Wolf that you'd like to share?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, may his memory be a blessing, you know, as we say. What can you almost say that hasn't been said about Steve Wolf? When, you know, he was one of the big guys in theater in St. Louis for so long. He knew his audiences, you know. That, I think, was very big, you know, coming out of all the discord they had, I think, prior to him coming in, right? They went through a slew of different artistic directors who were trying to get their pulse on the St. Louis audiences, as it were, and some were missing. I mean, I don't want to be tacky about it, but some were missing the boat terms of reading the audiences correctly, I think. And Steve knew how to do that. And he was an all-around good guy. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, well, we gave him at Arts for Life. That's the community theater organization, nonprofit that I'm on the board of. And we decided that we would give him a Lifetime Achievement Award. And we didn't think he would show up. We thought, you know, but he did. And he inspired those kids in the audience. He didn't talk down to anybody. He valued their dreams.
Yeah, he was a mentor, you know.
Yeah. He did not say like, you know, don't go into this business or whatever. He just talked about the joys of theater, of sitting in an audience and connecting, and how after you see something, you're all connected. You're never the same. And it was brilliant the way he inspired the kids. What I liked about him is he would pick works that he knew were going to be conversation starters.
Right.
And we might not all agree with, but also he had a sense of tradition too. And so he had that fine mix where he would, some of the works that I just thought so brilliant. I don't know if you saw his Take Me Out that was at the Grandel.
Yes, I loved that Grandel season. And the unfortunate thing was, Carl, and I don't know if you went to any of the shows. I know, Lynn, you did. I loved that. That was off ramp. And unfortunately, I guess it wasn't drawing the crowds that they wanted. But some of the more interesting fare for me, that McDonough play was there too. You know what I'm talking about.
Pillman. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that. And then the other one about the Irish terrorist organization. Bloody, 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 bloody. It was terrific. I can't think of that.
Was that the yellow something?
Lieutenant of Inishmore, I think.
Yeah.
Lieutenant of Inishmore was there. But that was some of the more interesting fare. And you know what? It didn't go. It wasn't supported, you know? Mm. But I think you're right. I think it's fair to say that he did have a very mixed season. And if you didn't like necessarily one piece or it didn't resonate with you, you could always come back and see something that was more, you know,
very
comfortable in your wheelhouse, as it were.
Yeah, well, and they were the first people to bring in some of the shows from New York because he had such clout. Yeah. Like what's the comedy that was the rage of Broadway that he brought in? It's only a play. It's the farce with all the
stuff. Yeah, it's only a play. I think no, that was Terrence McNally.
Yeah.
You're thinking of Terrence McNally. I know
it's the play that goes wrong.
That's right.
Yes,
we got it when it was still on Broadway.
Did you see that? Because I missed it. Was it hilarious?
Oh, hilarious. Oh, my God. And then the cast was out interacting with the audience, and it was just so funny. It really is one of the funniest things you'll ever see. But the timing was so crisp. And what's great is because Marjorie and Peter Spack, the local scenic designers who are brilliant,
right. Yes,
they put on the bookshelves the 42 plays that he directed as a homage to him.
Wow. Yeah. Isn't that cool?
I know. Well, you know, you've been to the Theater Circle Awards, and he just would, you know, trudge up and keep winning and winning.
Trudge up. That's those steps. I think, why can't he just stay on the stage?
I know. Well, hey, the Rep, we're going to have next year's Theater Circle Awards, March 28th at the Rep.
And we hope to see you there.
Yes. Hope to see you there. As we know, well, the last one that you were, we had it virtual, so you didn't get to do your speech.
We did.
But oh my God, that was so brilliant. And Carl, it was, one of these plays that hardly anybody ever does, and technically a challenge. And that lighting,
that's why no one ever does it.
that lighting and that sound.
Carl, do you know the show?
I am unfamiliar. I am sorry.
Yeah, what Lynn's saying is so true. You know, it was very, very much a technical challenge. And of course, that was a joke. Novak Duncey conceived the design, of course, and then Joe Novak executed it. And we had, it rained on stage at the very end, Carl, this beautiful love scene between two women. And the play itself was very revolutionary for its time. You know, it dealt with lesbianism and,
right,
of course, it was very.
But severe. Back in Nazi.
Yes. This play touched on so many different things. It was a joy to produce it. It was another one that I saw in New York, and I was determined to do it, you know. And Lynn knows it was difficult getting an audience for that. And sometimes I think, Lynn, you know, you always play Monday morning quarterback. You know, if it had been maybe in the new Jewish theater space, which of course didn't give me the scope of the Grandel. No. So you're dealing with that. You know, there's always something that's a small black box. But you know, perhaps it would have done better in terms of audience, Lynn, getting a lot of the Jewish community in the doors, you know. But saying that, I have no regrets. It was a labor of love, as we say.
Yes, it was.
I just want everybody to come out and see Tiny Beautiful Things. Carl loves it. Lynn, I think it's going to resonate with you. It is a beautiful, beautiful piece. And mask, unmask. You have your choice. You know, we're going to sanitize that theater. We're going to sanitize those seats. you're gonna know, it's gonna be totally safe. I promise
you. You can go to, you can either go to MetroTix or you can go to maxandlouis.com.
Yes, MetroTix 5, I'm trying to think, the number is MetroTix 314-534-1111, 10 to 4, Monday through Sunday. And as Carl said, www.maxandlouis.com. And you will see our COVID safety protocols posted on the Max Louis site.
Wow.
Thank you. Thank you, Stelly, for your time today. We really appreciate it.
I really enjoy talking to you both.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being on with us today.
Thanks, Carl. Thanks, Lynn.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.